very high expectation of what I've always thought this franchise is, and that was the best franchise in sports.
In the moments where we are now, as players, we got to execute. Every day, I'm so fortunate to be a part of this team.
This is 49ers Plus Minus.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here. This is 49ers Plus Minus. My co-host, it's Matt Barrows of The Athletic. We are recording this on Sunday afternoon after the 49ers' first day of training camp practice. I was going to say without Kyle Shanahan, but there was Kyle Shanahan out there. He found his way out there for, what, about 25 minutes of a very heavily 11-on-11 day. I thought it was surprisingly heavy of the stuff that we like to see. There was, I don't remember very many individual drills at all, at least not matchup drills. You know, receivers versus linebackers or cornerbacks versus receivers. It was none of that. It was 11-on-11s. It was a lot of work. Some guys stood out, some guys didn't. But were you surprised to see Kyle Shanahan wander out and stand there in the sun for 20, 30 minutes?
Yeah, it was longer than I expected. John Lynch had hinted towards that, saying you might see him from time to time. I think it was strategically placed. It was right after, we couldn't shoot photos or or video. And then he left the field right before practice ended, which is also when we can shoot video and things like that. So this was orchestrated. But, you know, I had the Monarch Sevens on him. And you could see the bandage looked like a soft cast on his left hand. And he was wearing sunglasses and he's going full mustache now. But other than that, I mean, it didn't seem like his face was swollen. You could barely tell that his eyes were discolored at all. My point is that I think he's kind of healing up. Obviously, the brain is something we don't know about. To what degree he's still experiencing concussion symptoms. But, he was moving around okay. Didn't see him run or jog or do anything like that. He was walking next to Shanahan the whole time.
Lynch.
Greeting some players. Fred Warner went over, Kyle Juszczyk, Trey Greenlaw, all right-handed daps, considering that his left hand is broken. So I can report that the head coach looks like he's making progress. That's about as far as I'm able to go with it.
Well, officially camp has started if you brought out the binoculars and were just peeling them right on Kyle Shanahan's face. That must have made him feel good to know that he had that kind of attention on him.
It is funny. I swear that Kyle and John were watching from the spot that, that John Lynch usually watches from, which is what, like
the back
30, 40 yards behind the defense. And at one point, John points, and it seemed like he was pointing at me because I had the binoculars trained on him, and he says something to Kyle and they both start laughing. So my guess was that, that weirdo Barrows has his binoculars trained on you. You better make it look like you're healthy right now. Something to that effect.
It wouldn't be the only time they've ever turned and looked at you and laughed. It wouldn't
it's
be
true.
The only time. I will say, I was surprised. He definitely, and he didn't look wobbly at least. I mean, it was short, but he was standing up tall and he was smiling and talking to people. We were, 40 yards away, whatever. It's hard to get a full read of that. But it fed into what I'd heard, that this is going to be, something they imagine is not going to take a long time. And John Lynch spoke to that yesterday. If he was not out there, you'd start to wonder, like, when is he going to be out there? If he looked bad, you'd wonder, is this more serious? You don't know, obviously, a scrambled brain is a scrambled brain and other healing he has to do. But this does not look like something that you could picture him coaching the team in the first exhibition game. Barrows, like, that doesn't mean he's going to, but by watching him, it is important just to see him. You could picture it again. Maybe he doesn't, maybe it's not wise for him to do it, but you could imagine that this guy could be back coaching this team. Maybe not 100%, some of the things, speeches or yelling or whatever, but I think that was just a decent sign. And I'll just say it, a decent sign that nobody lied to me about, like, this wasn't the most serious issue about, missing a season or something like that ever. I'm not going to get into too much of this, but Mike Florio accusing me of covering things up. But part of it was 2 days earlier, didn't know, you know, someone said it's not going to be that bad. It's a bad injury, bad accident, but he's not going to miss that much time. And this further evidence, like, hey, okay, you know what? Did you have to hear about this on Thursday or release it on Saturday in a very full also ESPN story? We'll see. There could be major problems. There could be complications. But I just don't know where the world needed absolutely to had to know everything by Thursday. If they're speaking truthfully and it does look like it, again, maybe they're wrong. And he's on the path to being the head coach of this team in every way fairly soon. And I will just say, Barros, I appreciated that tweet you sent out earlier this morning about a certain co-host of a certain podcast that is not this co-host of this podcast, because the person ripping me and ESPN mostly, but I got dragged into this, as his co-host is Kyle Shanahan's best friend from college. So, you start accusing things of people, go accuse him if you want to. Okay. All right, Barros, other than that, unless you want to add something to that.
Well, I do. I mean, the question would be, when does Kyle Shanahan come back? And what our listeners probably don't know right now, and they'll find out on Tuesday, is that they've got sort of a weird schedule.
Yeah, it is different.
There's a quirk in the schedule where they practice Sunday. Tim and I are recording this after the Sunday practice. They practice Monday. But on Tuesday, they have called on our media schedule a jog through day. So it's a light day of practice. So light, in fact, that we're not invited to come in.
There
so it's a dark media day. Everything gets darker and darker for us each year. And then they come back on Wednesday, and that'll be the longest practice in this ramp up. And then they have the league mandated players day off on Thursday. So, that's the question. Does Kyle Shanahan, quote unquote, coach the jog throughs, considering that's going to be a light, short practice? Does he come back after that first off day? We don't know yet. My sense of the timing of their releasing the information about it was that they thought that it was possible that, the concussion symptoms would have gone away by the start of training camp and that he would have been okay. And when they realized that they didn't, they're like, you know what? We have to tell the world that the head coach has been in a serious car accident and isn't going to be coaching. So that's why it took so long for us to get the media schedule. Yeah. I kept wondering, okay, why aren't they even putting out when Kyle and John are going to talk on Saturday, on report day? So I think that's all part of, if we don't have to report something, we won't do it. And as far as Florio and you, I think that he's right. I mean, if an outlet knew about it and they were sitting on it, that's probably the wrong take. But for Florio to criticize people for not knowing or not reporting on time is a bit hypocritical, given that his co-host is best friends with Kyle Shanahan. And I'm sure, my guess is that Mandy Shanahan called a bunch of people to let them know what happened, including a lot of the top players on the 49ers. That's how Fred Warner found out, for example. That's how other 49ers players found out. I would imagine that included, Kyle Shanahan's friends.
Chris Sims. Let's just say the name, Chris Sims.
Chris Sims. I'm not going to speculate about how ESPN got a hold of the story, but there's closeness between that network, reporters in that network, and the Shanahan family. There has been since the 1990s. That's it. I mean, and the reason we didn't get the story is that everyone's on vacation in mid-July when this happens. The 49ers weren't in camp. They did a good job. I mean, the players didn't know. That's how we would.
Trent Williams didn't know, he said today until.
He said that. I got to imagine that Mandy Shanahan.
Might have left him a message. I mean, maybe he was in transit or something. It is amazing that he wouldn't know. But, who knows? That's what he said until he read the story and then he knows the whole thing. It's maybe better that way.
But as far as. as far as how these things usually get out and how they would get out during the regular season is the players would find out about it and the players would tell their agents and then the agents would squeal to somebody. I mean, it becomes fodder. It becomes gossip almost. And then it eventually gets out to a reporter. None of the players knew at the time because nobody was, you know, everyone was on vacation. They were literally on vacation, including me and most of the other reporters that cover this team. So if you're chiding us for not knowing, we probably should have known earlier. Our sources probably should have told us, but the usual sources weren't in play on this one. And it was something that the team could kind of keep under wraps as long as it wanted to.
I'll just say he's throwing out, it was a public record. There's a police report. There's an accident report. You clearly knew it, and then we're trying to ignore it because Funaris told you, I didn't know it was an accident. So you would have to be randomly calling every police department every day. Is that what we're supposed to do every day that I don't see Kyle Shanahan?
Yeah. Did you not call the Milpitas police today?
I mean, I wouldn't even guess Palo Alto, by the way, because he doesn't live in Palo Alto that I know of. So it just, you know, again, he's building a case against ESPN. Fine. Go build a case against ESPN. To put my name in it as proof, to use me, to accuse me of a cover-up, I'm going to fire back. I'm not going to tolerate that. And I'm as open as it possibly. He used this podcast, right? He's listening to this podcast now. Maybe he'll use this podcast against me. I'm as open as I possibly can. I am as transparent. I know what I know. I say what I know. And I say if I had was thinking about something. So that's my point. And again, take all your shots you want to. I'll take them, but I'm going to fire back if you're messing with who I think the credibility I think I built up. And if there was something wrong with this, if something smelled about it, or if Kyle was going to miss a year and somebody was lying to me about it, totally different thing, right? Totally different thing. That's not this case. And it was Thursday. Did you absolutely need to know Thursday? A partial, I know he's going to miss Saturday and Sunday. And then, by the way, he was on the field Sunday anyway. So, okay, enough of that. I just wanted to get that out and say I appreciated the Barros, the podcast brotherhood there on that one. I do appreciate it. I will back you in any further.
Okay,
on you.
Good.
I haven't in the past.
I'm glad you said that because there are a couple of things that I'm dealing with now. I could use your help.
I got some Warrior stuff also. You could jump in on that one too. All right. They did practice. Again, I said tons of 11 on. Were you surprised how much 11 on 11 there was?
Not really. I mean, it's non-padded. It looked like the spring practices to me. Mm-hmm. So these first few practices are very much OTA level, and this is what they were doing in OTAs as well.
All right. Standouts. Who do you think look pretty good out there or maybe very good out there?
Mike Evans caught a couple of, big chunk play passes, one in which he burned the 49ers top cornerback, D'Amador Lenore. Not a slam on Lenore. Mike Evans is tough at the line of scrimmage. He knows how to get past cornerbacks. And so he did that. It was a nice pass from Purdy. I thought Purdy looked good as well. I wasn't keeping track, but somebody said that he went 10 of 12, which
sounds
tracks.
Right.
It sounds right. He had a nice solid day. Almost got picked by, who was it? Malik Mustafa. Mustafa just dropped a deep ball.
That's a tough one.
That was to Ricky Pearsall, I think. So I thought offensively he looked good. I thought Dejon Stribling, he had a couple of nice receptions, including one from Mac Jones at the sideline. Christian Kirk, however, left the field right before team drills began, seemed to be accompanied by a trainer. No update on that, but I think that no Christian Kirk means that more Dejon Stribling, certainly playing out of the slot. That's Kirk's spot. More reps for Jacob Cowing, more reps for Jordan Watkins as well. And then the running backs jumped out to me. Both of the backup running backs, those guys are in the spotlight this offseason. I thought Jordan James looked good. He's got real spring in his step. I thought Kalen Black looked really good on a couple of these are just individual drills, but this is something that, like, Jordan Mason, for example, did not look natural as a pass catcher when he did individual pass catching drills early on in his career. He got better and better at it. And that's who Kalen Black reminds me of from a physique, from a kind of running toughness standpoint. Kalen Black, though, is more adept in the passing game right now than Jordan Mason is. And Kalen Black apparently is a really good run blocker as well. Old school stuff. This is stuff that Bobby run Turner. Block.
What? Pass Bobby blocker, Turner
really.
Pass blocker.
Run what did
blocker.
I say?
Yeah, I said run blocker.
I said, oh, I meant pass protection, which is always a missing element for rookies, but he's good at it. My point being he's further along than a lot of rookie tailbacks are, and it makes that number two job a really good competition. So I'm hoping that neither guy gets hurt so that it's not, you know, win by default type of thing. And I should say that Christian McCaffrey looked good too. We overlooked the guy who almost had a thousand season last year. But, I think that he's out to prove that that's not going to affect him or not going to be a bad thing for him this year as well.
Yeah. Romello Height trying to guard him out one-on-one on the outside probably is not. That was a complete toasting by McCaffrey, as you would imagine with any rookie, anybody, any, you know, edge. But that was Christian McCaffrey in his prime, man. That was unbelievable. Little juke move inside out, and boom, he's past him. I laughed too with Kalen Black. I thought he looked fine, but then Furster says, yeah, he's older, right? He's older. Like, and all these guys are older. Like, these rookies are 23, yeah, 24, 25. Definitely a mature person, and you could see the mature runner. He's not, you know, just trying to do everything all at once. You could just see him take his time sometimes. Definitely an up-the-middle kind of guy. My guy, Jordan James, I thought looked really – you know, dynamic, you know, kind of spin through the middle, cut back, you know, boom, boom, get your 16-yard run. We'll see how that happens in later in camp as they get to preseason, see if he gets carries into the regular season. And I was going to say, Stribling, I thought, just looked smooth. He looks smoother than you usually see from rookie wide receivers. He's wearing, you know, is he wearing 15, right? He's 15.
Yeah.
So he reminded me of Crabtree a little bit. Now, he's bigger than Crabtree. But just like he just looks like Juwan Jennings, and you saw him run around and go, okay, he's pretty slow. Now he's getting balls, whatever. But the smoothness, the kind of accelerate out of a cut, and there he's open and he's going to get 18 yards and still be on the move. Ayuk had some of that, but I think Stribling looks more like a glider than anyone they've had, certainly at a top speed glider. His hands look fine. We'll see. But I was impressed with what I saw from him. I thought Ricky Pearsall was invisible for most of it. Then he caught two catches late, but I was like, this is a camp where Ricky Pearsall should look like a fantastic player, right? Just look like you really belong. Ayuk had a great camp before one of his big seasons. Debo always did stuff. Look like that, you know, I mean, probably may not be as good as them, but look something like that. And I think he's still got a ways to go. A couple of, like, that one pass that Mac Jones threw to is straight to the defense. Looked like Pearsall was supposed to be there and just never showed up there. And there was another one where I think it was a near interception. Like, who's he throwing to? Oh, I guess it was Pearsall, but he's like on the ground right now. Like, that doesn't look good for somebody going in their third season who is expected to be a starter. You know, still obviously a lot long way to go, but if I had to say someone I was looking for and didn't really see much and see them do much, it was Ricky Pearsall. It's not like he got shut out, but I didn't see much from him.
Yeah. It's interesting. There's always somebody who it's clear as day has the best off season. I'm talking OTAs through the summer. Last year it was D Winters who just, you know, made what should have been a competition between him and Nick Martin. You know, no contest at all. He was just head and shoulders better than everybody else. One of the best players on defense, and he ended up having a very good year. I won't say terrific, but very, very strong year. It'll be interesting to see who that is. I think a lot of times it's guys that were on hand throughout the spring who look good in the summer, especially early in the summer. And if you can string those two things together, which is what Ayuk did before the 23 season, it's what Deebo Samuel did before the 21 season. Remember Deebo Samuel's just transcendent year that he had that year. And Pearsall, you know, he was in for some of those practices, out for some of those. Mac Jones, I thought, he was the guy that stood out to me for not looking totally, as good as he has. And he missed the spring because of a shoulder injury. So you understand why he might be a little bit rusty right now. The concern for me, if I'm a 49ers fan, is the defensive line. I didn't think that the line got much push. Nick Bosa's back, and we should talk about how he got really, really strong praise today from Trent Williams. But he's being held out of team drills until he ramps up a little further. So you had a defensive line today that was Osa Digizua in the middle, next to C.J. West, with Keon White on one side and Romello Hite on the other. And that's not a starting caliber NFL defensive line. And that's going to change as the season goes on. But, it's not a good sign when three quarters of your line isn't practicing at the beginning of training camp, because it has an effect. At some point you reach a point in training camp where if the guy's not back, he's just not going to start the season well. It's hard for you to imagine him having a complete season, and that goes double for young players. So the longer the Alfred Collinses, the Mykel Williams are out, the worse it is for their beginning of the season. Having said that, I was looking at Alfred Collins, and he's a huge, big-bodied guy. He's cousins with Trent Brown, who had all sorts of size and weight issues throughout his career. I thought Alfred Collins looked great, looked trim almost. So I think that's a good sign that he's putting in a lot of work, and that weight won't be an issue, which could have been the case with a lingering issue like his shoulder. So once he comes back, and it should be in maybe a week or so from now, he should be able to hit the ground running.
Now, so you mentioned the defense. I think I'm going to be writing about this at least a little bit. Is it looked different, and I felt it looked different. I saw Odigizuwa a lot, like looking like he's playing defensive end, which he clearly isn't, which means that they had a fifth defensive lineman outside of him. Bring someone up, whether it's Luke Gifford, whoever it was, it's kind of hard to tell. You're looking through bodies, but Trent brought it up himself, right? It's like, it's definitely different. It's the first time it looks different. We've been practicing against the same defense, the same scheme all this time, from, Sala to D'Amico to Steve Wilks to Sorensen back to Sala. It's all been the same, four-man front, little wide nine, whatever. And this is different. And like he said so. And like, okay, does that mean, we're not really supposed to say scheme stuff, but he brought it up. It's five-man line. And yeah, he said, absolutely. Like they're doing the kind of maybe fake five-man line, drop back, do the five-man line, try to guess who's rushing. It looked different to me. The angles looked a little bit different. I think Odigizuwa is going to be a huge part of this, Matt Barros. It's hard to tell without pads. They're not really rushing. But I just think he's going to be like an Armstead. He's going to do both. He's going to rush outside, inside, going to try to fool the offense with where they're putting him. I think this is a big deal. And the fact that they're saying, yeah, this is different. Like literally Trent Williams saying, this is different than the previous years that I've practiced against this defense. And Fred Warner, I asked him, is this just going to be a different defense? He goes, time will tell. Like you could see them, if things start getting screwed up a little bit, they're going to go right back to what they've done for all these years. And I think Fred and Bosa will demand it. But I think Kyle Shanahan brought Raheem Morris here in order to do some different things, in order to make it look a little different, in order to figure out new angles on a team that only got 20 sacks last season. I'm not sure what they're going to get from the edges, right? Who that's going to be until Bosa and Mykel Williams are back, or even with Mykel Williams back, he's not going to be the edge on pass downs. They want to see Romello Hite come off that edge. I didn't see Duggar out there very much. He's another person. I know you like him. I'm not sure, Gifford is not a pass rusher, but he could certainly set the edge. I'm going to be really curious about that. And it did look different to me. I just like 92 is out there a lot on the outside, but not really the, you know, it's kind of the outside technique for a defensive tackle. It's going to be, if you have followed this team for a long time and you see them, you know, whatever, in a preseason game, it's going to look different if they keep doing this. I'm very curious how this is going to work. I know this is what they wanted to do. Who those edge guys are going to be? This new creation of an edge. Who's that going to be? I'm not 100% sure. Romello Height, he did go offsides too in a big time deal. So we'll see. He's a rookie, but he's 25. I don't want to keep saying it, but he is. But man, I know. And by the way, I thought Dre Greenlaw was just a friggin' cannonball out there. Like, as you would expect, like, he has not played a full season in quite some time. And he wanted to be back with the 49ers. He wanted to be back with Fred Warner. And that guy is explosive still. Now, we'll see if he can stay healthy. But he did not look like he was, you know, limping through anything out there today.
Yeah. And if he wasn't able to stay healthy, I think it would be Nick Martin who would be his replacement. He got a nice shout out today from Fred Warner, and I thought he looked good. I mean, he's extremely fast. I think it's just a matter of him not playing too fast.
You got to get rid of that number. 45 is just hard to think that he's a starting.
Yeah, that's Demetrius Flanagan Fowles' number. So you don't want to. Yeah, you don't want people to be thinking of that, I don't think, when he's out there. But I agree with you. I mean, I think it benefits the offense too. That was Trent Williams' point, is that everybody has a five down lineman package now. And it's, you know, sometimes they send five and sometimes they drop a guy into coverage. And sometimes that guy is not the guy that you expect. And so you got different people coming from different angles, which, to your point, Odikizua might be doing that at some points. And it's something that the Rams have used, including under Raheem Morris in the past. That's where it sort of started for them. So yeah, it'll be interesting, but you need versatile, you need dynamic players there. And I think Mykal Williams will kind of fit that role. It remains to be seen who else will. That is why I like Duggar, and maybe this is way too premature. This is kind of a future thing, but he's big. He's bigger than Romello Height is, in terms of weight, and he can move. So there's that versatility there. You can use him in a lot of different roles. I think that's what they're thinking about. I think they're also, you know, being very kind of cautious with him, not trying to give him too much early on. But he has the toolkit, I think, to do it. It's just a matter of how quickly he can put it together.
Just one thing, it's been mentioned in other places. I mentioned it. If they're having a good season and the pass rush still isn't there, I could see them talking about making a trade for somebody. And this, you wouldn't have to get the classic defensive end anymore, right? You could get, Jared Verse is the first name that comes to mind. I don't know if they could get him from Cleveland, but I think Raheem Morris would take Jared Verse, who would be the perfect edge for this team. Five-man line, four-man line, whatever you do, you just put him on an angle and let him go. Max Crosby, of course, is another name out there. I just like this might be the season, as opposed to last season, when they feel like one more player could do it. They've got some picks. I know these picks are valuable, but I don't know if they've got that player, Barros. I don't like if they think they're Super Bowl bound and Bosa is really good, but just got it. You need, I just don't know who that other guy is. I'm not sure it's going to be Romello Height. It's an awful lot to ask of him. We'll see.
There's another guy named Bosa out there.
There is another Bosa. John Bosa? Is he ready to come back? He might be.
Former first-round pick, Bosa?
There's a reason why. Again, who am I to say? He was fine last season, but there's a reason he's still unsigned. I could see something. And I'm kind of waiting because you did not look there and go, man, they got full edges. Oh, man, that's what they got, edges. I did not think that going in. What do you think about Chris Foerster? He spoke to us. He's not officially the interim coach, but he is basically the interim coach. Although, you know, Raheem Morris is running the defense and Clay Kubiak's running the offense, and Foerster is not going to mess around with that. He did say that the one thing Kyle told him is, you know, take care of what you got to take care of, but anything you don't want to, delegate. And I don't know that he's going to delegate a ton. He's just not going to be the guy who's going to get hit. And I am now commanding the room. This is me. He said he's not a great speech giver. And he said he didn't really know until he was going to have this role until they put out the release, which is very 49ers. But of course, it's going to go to him because he's the assistant head coach and he's the guy that goes back furthest with Shanahan. And I think the guy that Shanahan can talk to the most, you know, just in a casual way about how things are going. What did you think about Foerster today? What do you think his role is going to be?
Well, I think one of his biggest roles is, you know, what he did with us. It's basically being the face of the team and speaking for the team. And I thought he did a great job at that. You know, he's got a very, you know, approachable demeanor. He's got a good sense of humor, for example. I thought he did a good job at that. I mean, it wasn't like Jim Tomsula's first press conference where you got the flop sweat and
that would be bad.
You're not ready for the role. He seemed comfortable up there and he's been up there before. He spoke for a couple of years once a week to us. So he's comfortable at the lectern. He basically said that, you know, the whole thing is on autopilot. The day is so scheduled and regimented that you don't really need somebody, you know, up there, you know, telling you where to go. That's all taken care of. What's lacking now are the kind of the team situations, the team meeting, the team breakdown, the team this, the team that. Once they're out of the team mode, it's really kind of no different than when Shanahan's there as far as the day-to-day workings of training camp. So, you know, I don't think today's opening day of camp was all that different than the previous, what is it, nine under Shanahan, except for the fact that they didn't have the big team meeting and the big sort of tone-setting team meeting. And maybe that was Saturday with John Lynch at the helm. But I'm always interested in that and how kind of Shanahan, you know, is depicting the season, how the shape of it, how he sees the shape of it. And then you can tell what Shanahan's saying because his players all echo it, to a degree when they speak to us. So they don't have that yet. I don't think it's going to be very long until they do have that. You know, until that happens, it's still up in the air. It's a head injury, something that's very murky to this day. And, you know, we shouldn't put the cart before the horse.
No. One thing, Chris Foerster ain't given practice injury reports, tell you that.
No, that was a bit of a disappointment. Yeah.
Yeah. No way. No. I mean, I say Shanahan's amazing about that. That's one thing he is very good about is going through the injuries. Without having to check, what does health say? What this guy? I'm not really sure. Like there are fuzzy times, no question, because some of these injuries are fuzzy, or some of these things they just don't want us to know that they're worried about them. But he'll go through the list of injuries, and that is not happening with Chris Foerster. So if people are crying for injury updates, as Foerster said, oh, you'll get them from Corey. No, we're not getting them.
Yeah, we didn't get them from Corey. Yeah.
Yeah. So I love the way the first all like pointed out. It was a release when I knew this. He was pointing to Corey, like Corey announced that he was the interim head coach. I don't think Corey's the one picking him as interim head coach. But that is the 49er way anyway. I thought Clay Kubiak was, you know, the plays seemed to go in really fast on the 11-11s. That's the whole thing. Get on the walkie-talkie and get that call into the quarterback. There didn't seem to be a delay with any of that. Seemed to be just they did the standard stuff. I thought it was interesting that Trent Williams said that, and this might just be, you know, in the moment and he likes him. I want to say something nice, but it was interesting. Like, he's like the best. Didn't he say he was the best? Or was that Foerster? The best of any of the offensive coordinators have come through, the sharpest. That might have been.
Oh, Foerster. I didn't catch that. He said
that might have been Foerster. Yeah, and I thought, you know, Mike McDaniel, your guy, it was Foerster because Mike McDaniel, his guy, was there, and you would have thought McDaniel would be the top guy of any of those because he's been the number one boy, right, for Shanahan for quite some time. So I thought that was interesting. I think Clay is definitely sharp. I mean, he obviously got the play calling role last year, and McDaniel did not in preseason. And McDaniel never did. And I noted that. Like, that was interesting. I'm sure McDaniel would have loved to have that and would have loved to be pointed out by Shanahan as you're my first offensive coordinator to get to call plays at any point whether preseason or not. So I think maybe Clay Kubiak's got some special system. We know his brother is head coach in the Raiders and won a Super Bowl as offensive coordinator of the Seahawks. Maybe Clay is right there with him. Maybe he's ahead of him. I don't know. I just thought it was interesting. I'm pretty sure it was Firster who said that. But everything else seemed to roll pretty well. I mean, I don't know anything other notable that you picked up, Barros?
I'm trying to think of what else I wrote about.
Trent Williams went down like a little ankle thing, but he popped right back up.
Well, Vidarian Lowe went down. And Trent Williams went down. So at one point they were without their top two left tackles, which I would characterize as disastrous. First practice of training camp. Williams ended up being okay, and he returned to practice. But it was interesting. It was weird. The first guy in after Lowe sort of limped to the sideline, so they were in second team mode at that point, was Enrique Cruz. I said to myself, oh, this will be a really nice opportunity to see Enrique Cruz with the twos. You usually don't see that with a rookie this early in camp. And he handled himself well through the rest of that sequence. But the next time the twos were up, it was Austin Pleasance. At left tackle. Remember, he filled in week 18 against Seattle. It wasn't great for Trent Williams. And then the sequence after that, it was Brandon Parker. So I guess they're still kind of looking to see who the number three would be in that scenario. But I thought it was a really nice moment for Enrique Cruz, probably a really nice confidence boost that he was the first guy that they tapped. Run in there for the Darian Lowe right now. And he handled it well. So he's the heir apparent to Trent Williams, probably not until 2028. Yeah, probably not until 2028 at the earliest. I mean, Trent Williams could be playing until he's 50 for all we know. I thought it was if that's the slight beginning of the Enrique Cruz era, I thought it was a good step.
That's getting aggregated. That is going hard. Yep. People are going to go hard on that one. I noticed your guy Connor Colby. You called this like in March is getting a first crack at left guard, and the way they do it, and it was Chris Firster up there, and we know like if they plop you in there and you keep doing okay, you're not going to get jumped over unless you screw it up. I mean, I really do believe this is Connor Colby's job to lose. I think they liked what they saw from him last season, and he's just going to get that, you know, if he can stay healthy and he can look okay, it'll be like a Dominic Pooney as a rookie thing. Like, you're just going to keep playing guard. I mean, I don't know that anyone's going to jump him right now.
Yeah, I think, you know, if there's anybody that's going to jump him, it's Robert Jones. I think those two guys are probably well ahead of the others. Brett Toth was out for OTAs, and he was sort of being worked in. He didn't get a full practice today, but he was back. They need him to be the backup center, however. So that's sort of working against Toth, I think. If he's, you know, far and away the best left guard, he'll get the job, but I just don't know if he's going to get that opportunity because he's being worked at guard and at center. And then the other guy is Carver Willis, who's a fourth-round draft pick. Very hard to see him winning it, given that he didn't play guard at all in college. He was a tackle. And they've been moving him right side and left side at guard. So he's a work in progress. I think that it's arrow up for him, but thinking that he's going to be a starter this year might be a bridge too far. So I think it's Robert Jones and Connor Colby, and right now Connor Colby's in the lead.
All right. Well, and with that, Connor Colby, of course, is the kicker. It's the information everybody was waiting for. I'm still going back to. I would like to see your face with the binoculars up when you see Shanahan and Lynch look right over to you and give you a little wave, conspiratorial wave. Thanks for covering up the accident, Matt Barros. That's what that was.
Yes.
And thanks for participating in our grand cover-up, where people found out about this 2 days after you might have known about it. So. That's a note for all you aggregators out there. Barros, that's it, unless you got something else.
No, I mean, I keep pumping up Monarch 7s, my binoculars.
You get that?
I haven't even gotten a freaking T-shirt from them yet. I probably sold, you know, how many? Like 100, 200 different units?
There's so many Barros wannabes out there at camp that they're just, like, walking around with binoculars because they want to be Barros.
Well, here's the thing. here's the thing. People make fun of me because I walk around with the binoculars, but everyone's like, hey, Burroughs, can I borrow your binoculars for a second? While they check out the guy who's rehabbing 600 yards away. And so
nobody is
binoculars
prouder.
End up being pretty valuable.
Nobody is prouder to walk around with giant binoculars at 49ers camp than Matt Burroughs. Nobody.
Hey, everybody's talking about my binoculars.
All right. I will not be at practice tomorrow. Burroughs will be. Maybe he'll do a solo. Maybe not. I think I'll be back. I might be. I think Friday feels like the first pad of practice, Burroughs, to me.
Yeah. So they have Friday. They have Thursday off. So yep. that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I might be back before then. I might not. But Friday looks like it's going to be, at least if not pads, something energetic, because they'll be off and they'll be bouncing back for sure. Thinking of Friday, but maybe one of those days in between too. So Burroughs, you do whatever you want to do.
Are you going to come down on Tuesday just to make sure that they're not having a full practice? I mean, that seems suspicious to me. That
it is such a faked up thing, no question.
Thank you.
I will not be there. They're coming up with ways for us not to be there.
Exactly.
Gee, look at me saying something anti 49ers. That must shock some people there.
Yeah, aren't but you on yes. the payroll? I thought you were in cahoots with of them.
It's like $50 million a year I get for this. It's great
nice.
Stuff.
It's good. It's
a big deal. I mean, you know what? I should be getting more. The value I have in delaying a story 2 days, but I'll take the $50 million. It's not a terrible thing. So, all right, everybody. Ed Sheeran probably got him $50 million just for that show. It blocked off streets, and we couldn't walk around yesterday. I was a little annoyed by that. More than a little, I was very annoyed by that. But that's a whole other conspiracy. All right, everybody. That is a conspiracy for today. Remember what my initial idea for the title of this podcast was, Barrow?
Was it conspiracy theory?
49ers conspiracy.
Or aggregate this.
Oh, aggregate this, mofos. All right, everybody. That is the show for today. You might get Barrows over the next few days. I might join in at some point. I don't know that I'm going to go to practice at least until Wednesday, but maybe not until Friday. But we can still come up with this talk. All right, everybody. See you.